You are listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. Coming to you virtually live from high atop the historic Raleigh building in beautiful downtown Raleigh. The NCF&B takes the listener behind the scenes to tell the stories of the people that contribute to the creation of the food and beverage community of North Carolina. And now, the misfits in the dish pit, the faces of the front. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. Turn on the lights, everybody, because today we have the owner of the up-and-coming J-Lights in Durham, one Mr. Jared Burton.
Hey, how's it going? I'm excited to be here.
What's up, man? Yeah. And also, you brought some of your teammates with you, Chef Carly Adelman. Welcome.
Thank you.
She's off there in the corner. We didn't put her in the corner. Nobody puts me in the corner. And then, of course, we have the GM, Ryan Grover.
Welcome.
Thanks,
guys.
This
is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, this doesn't necessarily pertain to you, but
sure.
There's something that's on my mind. Okay. It's really bothering me, right. And I have to rant about it.
Go, Matt.
Maybe you guys can chime in. Whatever your opinion may be. We are sitting here, by the way, on election day, although this has really nothing, maybe something to do with the election. But my point is, what's bothering me is, I don't know if you guys have seen this article that came out in the New York Times about what's going on with the Court of Master Sommeliers. Apparently...
I didn't know where this question was going.
Yeah.
So hold on. Right.
Let's lost, guys. I don't know what's going on here.
Give us some context.
We'll frame this a little bit. Matt is he's the Andy Rooney of our show right now. This is a reference no one will get.
60 minutes. Okay, gotcha.
But all also, right. Yeah, but also, Matt, just, you know, the Andy Rooney section was always at the very end of all the podcast or out of the shows. So we're going to do this at the front, which is fine. I appreciate the angry old man that wants to chat it up at the very top. What Matt is referring to, and Matt and myself have gone through the Court of Master Sommeliers programs at various levels, but he's referring to a New York Times article that came out entitled, "The Wine World's Most Elite Circle Has a Sexual Harassment Problem."
Oh, no.
The Court of Master Sommeliers confers high honors, but many women candidates say they've paid a steep price. And that chaps Matt's hide.
This does chap my hide.
We're just getting into it today.
We're getting right there. So the Court of Master Sommeliers is one of the most held in most high esteem. If you are a master sommelier, you are thought to have it made. But to get into there, you have to pay money to take tests. Mm-hmm. You pay money to be examined. You also have to have the approval of a quote-unquote establishment, an old boys club, to advance within this court. And the tests are very subjective. Now, the fact that we pay money and give money to be examined, you give the court to power. And what I'm saying, especially in this time of anti-establishment, because, and this is what brought me here, Bobby Stuckey, who is a very famous restaurateur and master sommelier out
Frasca
there.
And
Frasca in Colorado, has his own wine.
Scott Petta.
Yeah, Scott Petta.
Yeah.
Great guy all around.
Oh, yeah.
He called for the... for all this establishment, for everybody to step down, and that nobody should be, you know, allowed to control, because these men use their influence on these women in order for them to move up and get where they wanted, so to speak. My claim is that's just more establishment. Mm. So we can merely step up as a wine community and say, no, I'm not going to pay you anymore. Vote with your dollar. I'm not going to pay for your exams because as
defund
Max and I...
the Court of Master Sommeliers?
Just don't pay them. We pay them with our money. This is not a government that you have to that you have to listen to, because you will get arrested if you don't. You just don't have to join them, because that is not... the only validation.
Right.
You as a working wine professional, and I know plenty, can become a badass in your profession without getting an accreditation from the Court of Master Sommeliers. So I say, women, black people who are sommeliers, Jewish people who are sommeliers, whoever type of
even
a minority, even old white guys, don't pay the money to be examined and just be a badass in your wine profession.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't want to take away from those people who have made it because they've worked their ass off, but it's not the only way, and it doesn't need to be an establishment anymore.
I have agreed with you on this many times. I think maybe I've been saying this for a long time. I don't like I just don't like being a part of anything. Like, yeah. I don't like being a part of any group, whether you're Republican, a Democrat, whatever. I just be a – I'm a part of the human race, and that is, like, the only group, and Raider Nation. That's it. Laker Nation, Dodger Nation, yeah, we keep winning. So I identify when we win. I'm kidding. But
well said.
Very, very L.A. of you.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what I'm trying to get across here is – the word sommelier was not a word created by the Court of Master Sommeliers. It is a term, it is a French word that means handles the one who handles the wine program.
Yes.
And so if you, and I'm talking to somebody just listening, are handling the wine program at your restaurant and you don't have an accreditation through the Court of Master Sommeliers, who cares? You are a sommelier.
Right.
You are doing the job just like you are a chef, just like you're a pilot. Well, pilot, you might need to get some education.
Keep going to school. Everybody else.
Pilots, you better learn. We can't all be Sully.
Doctors, yeah.
But doctors, yeah. But in this scenario, if you've put in the effort, put in the time, there was a long time before I got the certification that I consider myself a sommelier. And I think sometimes Matt and I would even, like, he'd raise an eyebrow at me like, you're throwing that around pretty loosely. And I go, no, I'm not. I'm a sommelier. What am I doing? I'm managing the Cafe Del Rey's wine program, which is super expensive. It requires a lot of thought. Mm. I'm putting the educations together. I'm putting the pricing together. I'm ordering. I'm meeting with buyers or with salespeople. Yeah. I'm running it. Yeah. I'm a sommelier. And so you just get to the next level. So I like what you're saying, though, Matt. It's like have a little bit more respect for the industry the position and not let it be dictated by one independent third-party company that is clearly fucked from the inside out that's been using their influence.
Abusing their power.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this case, for women, like we said, you're the judging is subjective. Now, I can only tell you how it was for me, but when I got my certification, I was in a room full of 55 employees of one wine company, and guess what? All the wine that was supplied for the tasting, the blind tasting, were all supplied by my company.
Yeah, sure.
And so I've tasted, you could say I was a goddamn badass that day, but I nailed it 100% on the 6 blind tastes that we had to go through. And all that's normally asked of you is the varietal, the vintage, and the region, right? The AVA. I did all those. And on top of it, I said, yeah, it's also, this is Carmel Road. This is the label. And this is like, you know, where it comes from. They're like, oh, we don't need to know. I'm like, it's also $14.99 and on my sales quota right now. They're like, yeah, that's too much information. I go, yeah, but you guys cooked the books because you gave us all the wines that we clearly knew. So all 55 of our employees all, guess what, became certified sommeliers that day. And there were 3 other people in the room, 2 of which also made it through, 1 didn't. And those were just buyers that had nothing to do with our company. And so like in that group, 2/3 of the people won and 1 didn't. It had nothing to do with race or sex or creed, but it just had to do with the fact that the
company was sponsoring it.
Yeah, the test was lilted towards us.
It's a 4-pay scenario, and the fact that these women have been abused by it, my heart goes out to them, and that's horrible. However, I don't feel like we need to all of a sudden say, oh, step down, call your jobs. No, the biggest way to take the power back is to just not support them with your dollars.
Yeah, so, there's other, there's the WSET, there's other certification, the CSW, there are far other places.
How about just read Jancis Robinson's book and you will be pretty, and then taste a bunch of wine with a bunch of other cool wine people that know what they're talking about and you'll be pretty good, well off.
Yeah. Well done. So let's take a little
Andy.
Break. So we're going to transition now to J-Lights and Jared Burton over here. Jared, you've become my quarantine buddy.
I know.
Yeah.
We befriended like right when you did those parties over here.
The happy hours.
Yeah,
which was basically the last time we were ever allowed to like touch each other, hold each other, sit in each other's laps, which is a lot of that happened during those weeks.
Yeah.
We should have just listened to Anthony Scalabrini from the beginning. Oak City Amaretto.
He did tell us that week. He's like, just so you guys know, you probably should not be as close as you are.
Yeah.
And as I said, he's a Marine. He probably knew a little bit more about the world affairs at that time. So thank you, Anthony, for your delicious amaretto and your forewarnings. But we didn't listen to him. So, Jared, we did meet through mutual friends, through Liv.
Yeah.
And she's like, you guys should get to know each other. And as we got to know each other, we realized we lived in the same neighborhood, which was very beneficial during the quarantine, because sometimes dads just got to get outside and go on a walk.
And hang out, beer walk.
And we are dads. We both are dads of two daughters. I bring that up because Jay Lights has a lot to do with the name of your two daughters.
Yeah, no, so it's, you know, when you're going through this process and naming things, and I mean, I used to work in branding and marketing, but I don't know. You find something you love, and man, I played with so many names, but I just kept coming back to the kids, and the way I justify it is, I guess it was about 4 years ago. We went to Amsterdam, me and my wife, and we got tattoos together, and my wife got our daughter's names tattooed on her wrist. And my name is nowhere, so I didn't make the cut. And she was like, but I'll always be their mom. And I was like, okay. Like,
what are you insinuating about him?
But Jay Lights, it's Janie and Lightsy, the names put together. And I was like, that's something that I'm never going to have a problem with. It's never like, you know, you pick a name and 10 years from now, things are going to change. But Jay Lights, that's it. It's Janie and Lightsy. So.
Lightsy.
Lightsy.
That's a unique name.
Yeah, so my wife again, we met at Clemson, at Lightsy Bridge. We were both RAs, so Lightsy the Bridge. Cool kids on campus. Yeah, nice. Lightsy Bridge apartments, and that's where we met, and we were naming our second daughter. Heather was like, what about Lightsy? I was like, done. That's perfect. I don't know any other Lightsys.
Oh, I love that when there's like sentimental value, like the bridge you guys met on. Nice.
You said, my wife, like four times without the voice. Yes. Bothers me. We did watch Borat 2 at my house last week, so see, like we're buddies, but aside from that, it just so happens that you're opening a place in Durham in this cool spot. We'll get to it. We'll get to the whole thing, but kind of just setting the stage a little bit, as you just alluded to, you went to Clemson. A lot of Raiders went to Clemson playing on the team right now. That's really cool. Has nothing to do with this part of the story. But
well, just admit it. You would rather have Trevor Lawrence than Derek Carr.
Just admit it. I'm not admitting that.
But the Nordic just said Prince.
Oh, yeah, boy. Yeah. Well, Hunter Renfrow is my boy. But you're a educated man.
Sure.
You've been in this business for a while, but I do think we need to talk about what went on from you graduating in Clemson to you opening up your own individual business right now, because a lot happened that made you the business person that you are. I'm speaking about you working for New Belgium.
Yep.
You worked there for
Almost 9 years.
Almost 9 years.
Yeah.
In what capacity? What was like your, where'd you start? Where'd you finish?
So I came on and I was, I think I was the Southeast Field Brander was my first title there. And so I did regional marketing, which at the time was a lot of events and sponsorships and donations. And then I had four states. So I was based in Atlanta and I started there. And then that role just kind of transitioned to where it's now like a field marketing manager for that. I forget what they call it now, but so I had I guess five states on the East Coast, and that's when I moved to Raleigh, and I got to move up here when Asheville started being built at New Belgium. And I mean
they're Asheville's facility where
correct. And I came up here, and I was from North Carolina before that. We lived in Charlotte before we moved to Atlanta with New Belgium. But I mean, New Belgium is where I learned professionally to be, I don't know, what I am today. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I hope it's a good thing. But, it's where I learned about open book accounting, taking care of your employees, you know, doing things that are right, just empowering people. And
So your job as marketing manager. And by the way, we buried the lead a little bit. So I think we should say your cafe that we're going to get to is right next to High Wire Brewing.
Correct.
On that campus in Durham. It's going to be, in my opinion, if anybody's ever been to New York City and you go to these like little bodegas, imagine that with a really spruced up, cool vibe and a full bar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's the concept in a nutshell is trying to take that bodega and just upgrade the food a little bit. You know, we're kind of be high end, fast casual. You know, Carly, who you'll hear from, she's cooked in some amazing kitchens here in Raleigh. And so she's going to bring some
awesome
high caliber foods that are going to be served quick and out the door, and then we'll have some grocery and snacks, so not anything super big there. We're talking probably less than 300 items, and then we'll have a full bar. And then we'll have packaged beer and wine for sale, so there'll be, you know, six packs and stuff like that you can grab. And then, you know, we'll have about 50 seats inside. You know, it'll be toned down some for, obviously, the current environment that we're living in. And then the patio. Like, if you've been out to Golden Belt and seen what Highwire's doing, and now there's a Two Roosters across the street that artisanal ice cream spot. And there's still one spot open in there, but that little courtyard area, it's nice. It's got that green space. And
it's pretty awesome. Max and I had the pleasure of going to tour the space. But let's now go back.
Sure.
Let's go in the rewind.
But you were at New Belgium.
Yeah. Well, I want to know, like, as field marketing manager, so does that mean, like, New Belgium says, here's your budget, you go and figure out how to promote us and hire some people, like, and that's it? Or what is your day-to-day doing
there? Yeah, I'll dive into it. So basically, we did have a budget, and the thing I really enjoyed about them is they empowered you, and you really kind of owned your market. Like, our company motto at New Belgium was own your shit. And it was, so you had
unofficial motto, of course.
Well, it was something that people said to you on a very regular basis. Like, own your shit. Like that. And so I had states and markets and, like, in the beer world and as much like every other world, like in a market, I had a distributor and I had how the products were performing. And so we would get a plan and we were going to have these products we're going to launch this year. And you had this amount of dollars, and you looked at your market and, like, where can I make a difference? Mm-hmm. And so within that, we had different campaigns we were doing that you were going to modify, but it was my job to take those and plug those into those markets mm-hmm. and figure out how they worked and then manage the activation and the social media and all the media and stuff you would do around it. And so, you know, you bounced around. It was fun. Definitely, like, my favorite job, you know, I'd had up to that point. I just learned a lot there. But, yeah, that was it. So.
Nice. You also spent some time with Larry's Beans, Larry's Coffee.
Former sponsor of this podcast.
Yeah. I was there for a year. I was doing a head of sales and ops there for a year, and it was great. You know, I learned that they have some amazing people there. You know, it was that being there showed me that it was time for me to go do my own thing, right? And it was just, I was ready to...
Yeah.
Step out, and I have been saying this, and my wife will tell you that I've been saying this since I was 23 that I wanted to do my own thing, and you know, I'll say this, I love New Belgium. If I hadn't left and gone to Larry's, I don't know if I would be doing this. Obviously, starting your first business in a pandemic is phenomenal timing. I can't recommend it to anybody else enough, but. I'm just excited to finally be doing it, you know. Like I was talking to another business owner the other day, and we were just saying that, you know, at this point, like, I'm ruined. Like, I don't know if I could ever go back and work for anybody ever again. You know, I'm so excited to work with Ryan and Carly, and we have Angel and Andrew. We have a really solid team. I'm really excited to work with them. I think if I had to go work for people again, I would be like, no, what? What am I doing? I couldn't do it. So
yeah, I think, well, there are certain times, like, you have to then be the creation side of a business, and, like, you've now kind of gotten a taste of it, and you know what it takes. You also had been making money for other companies for a while, and it's like, okay, I see how this works.
Right.
It's time for me to do it on my own. You and I have had those soul-searching conversations at the house over a few delicious IPAs. And it's motivational. It's like, you know, there's that, like, shit or get off the pot type of thing. It's like, are you going to work for somebody else for the rest of your life? Or are you going to do something on your own? And I think you just kind of wait for those moments to be right. And they're never perfect. Of course, the pandemic happened, but you already had wheels in motion before this. So you're just like, okay. I mean, talk about that for a sec. Like, how did the pandemic affect your, the flow of reaching the finish line? Like,
sure. I'll go back just a little bit. So, I left, Larry's in November of last year, right the Tuesday before, Thanksgiving. And I had just seen the space, and, I signed an LOI that day. And I had not written my business plan yet, and definitely had not secured financing. And then, you know, just went into oh shit mode and, wrote a business plan and got that, over there, and then started reaching out to amazing other restaurant owners, business owners in town, and just asking them questions. And I can't, like, Dean Ogden at Rocky Top helped me, Jake at Capital Club, Chris and Woody at Trophy. I mean, I just sat down with all these people, and they just were so open about what they were going through, and then they got me. Seth Gross in Pompier, like he was such like just so many great people. Sean at Koan, like all these people really just like let me go and sit down and set my plan, and just like, is this good?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like this is good. Is it good? And so, got everything moving, got a GC hired. I was supposed to close on my SBA loan the 12th of April, and 17th, got a call the 12th, and the bank froze all loans because of the PPP stuff that was happening. And my banker, who I very much like, but I called him. I said, okay, his credit approval coming. They're the people that are going to be like, all right, you're good to go. I was like, what are they looking for? He goes, I have no idea. And I was like, all right, fantastic. Brand new business owner in a quarantine. And, you know, like I basically had money set aside to float the time, but not a lot of extra. And I just kind of started working backwards, like renegotiating things. And so, we ended up closing in August, so I had to float an additional 4 months, but instead of being open in August, you know, we'll be open this month. So,
yeah, which is great. So you are, the build out doesn't take too long for a build out. I mean, you had basically a shell of a unit. And so then you had to put up some walls and paint and some plumbing and all that. But that process is like, what, 6 weeks roughly?
No, a total build out, it would probably be about 12, a hair over 12. And I'll say this, Gateway, who's our GC out there, they've been phenomenal. They do a lot of projects at Golden Belt, but working with Austin, that's my GC, and then his dad, Jack, they've just been such team players, you know, because I had to change so many things from when we started to where we were now, and just to work with a GC that's just like, yeah, we'll figure it out. We got this.
They sound like good folks. They sound like good folks to work with.
You know, that's interesting you bring that up, Max.
Yeah. Because that leads us to talk about the Folks Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. Through their ongoing grants, allows small businesses such as like a podcaster or say even a small new bodega that would be opening or an artist, musician to get off the ground. They ask for donations from their site, and you, the listener or a fan of their company, would donate to them because you are also a fantastic folk and you want to continue to bring artisans up above, online. And so they give grants to a small company to get them off the ground. And so
you don't just have to give them money, though. You can sign up for their monthly journal,
right,
which is a beautiful piece of literature and has great articles and great stories of all great champions of North Carolina.
Yeah.
Or you can buy their album, a nice vinyl album, the Carolina Quarantine Project.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, you can get on their website, go to folksfoundation.org. You can check out everything that they do. It is quite fascinating. And feel free to give a little donation if you are so obliged. But that is cool. You were talking about, aside from all the good folks, this was an interesting thought that I had. And I know U.S. Foods is going to love this free promotion right here. But they deserve it because what they did was really cool. You, Jared, they've are been not phenomenal. Like, you're not a chef. Now, you brought Carly in, who is, but in the design of getting this off the ground, they did a lot to help you out, too. Like, they helped you organize your menu, kind of structure it, and then even brought in a crew of people to cook the dishes out and kind of show you, like, how to put it together. I know, like, my buddy John Childers, he works for them now, but he used to be a chef at Midtown Grill.
Yeah.
He was at the Umstead for a while, but he does a lot of that type of stuff. So I've been aware of like these type of services, and this is not a commercial for U.S. Foods. This is more just like, hey, if you're like starting a new business and you don't know anything about the food side of it, like you can work with companies that can help you get to that next level.
Ask for help.
Yeah.
If you want to do something, ask for help. And then, somebody was talking to me the other day about like how much networking gets devalued. And I've been so lucky to have met so many people over my careers and stuff that I've done, but reach out and say I would love to help. And I mean, I don't want to turn this into U.S. Foods commercial either, but I'll say this, they've been phenomenal. They've helped in the development. We did those kitchen development days. They sent over 4 or 5 people and spent all day with us working through real-time pricing our list, helping us source stuff. And really just kind of helping us kind of tighten up the stuff and feel like we were getting ready to launch. And they'll have a customer, in me for a long time because they did that. But you know, that's not something you see all of the time.
And, well, I'll just say though, if you are a good sales company, especially with the resources of a company like US Foods,
right.
And by the way, shameless plug here, you know, like that's what I do for a lot of my clients in my world as a Winebow representative for people that maybe don't know wine or they're not a sommelier, you know. But you know, you tell them, okay, here's what's working, here's what people like, here's what people drink. You get 5 reds, 5 whites, 2 rosés, a couple of sparklings, and away you go, you know, and then have this much inventory. And I mean, obviously that helps you, but it also helps you as the purchaser.
So much so. And I mean, you know, you're going to figure this stuff out, and when you're going, you have to do it. But I've leaned on so many people, and I say that we did a 2 wine tastings, and then we've got another one today, and then we need to hook up with you and talk about some wine, because I'll say this, I am not a sommelier.
But actually, that leads me to ask Carly. Let's in just the short amount of time that we were speaking before the mics were turned on, it was I had learned that you had worked at Death and Taxes for a little while, that you also were part of the Jolie team when they were first opening. So 2 fantastic restaurants in this area. How is it for you? Is this the first time that you were kind of like, you have the keys to the kitchen and you're running it yourself? And what's that like?
Yeah, so thanks for having me, first of all. This is awesome. I keep looking out the window because this is the highest up in a building that I've ever been in Raleigh, and I've been in Raleigh for 4 years. So I just keep staring out at the window, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in like a huge building right now.
This is the 94th floor.
Talking about
minus 90.
Talking about food, and it's incredible. Yeah, you know, shout out to Ashley Christensen and Scott Crawford, you know, working for you guys since I've been in Raleigh. You know, you guys have helped me definitely mold my career. But yeah, this is my first executive chef title. Jared's given me the opportunity. I couldn't be more excited.
How was that with like the US Foods guys coming in? Because obviously it's like your turf,
yeah,
but it's new turf.
You know, as a chef, you always want to do like local, and you always want to do, and you think, oh, like Cheney, US Foods, Cisco, they're not going to be able to do that. They're not going to be able to provide me that product, you know, as a chef. And you kind of get like, you know, with that, but like, it's been the complete opposite. US Foods has just been fabulous. The team over there, Chris and Allie, my food rep, they've just been great. Giving me samples, you know, like my fridge, I have like 4 gallons of mayonnaise in my fridge, but you know how but it's been fabulous. They have farmers reports, like you can find everything that's local. There's not an issue with getting local products. They've just been fabulous. They've been great.
That's really cool. And you said since you've been in Raleigh, now where are you from?
I'm from Florida.
Oh, that's right.
Palm Beach, Florida.
Yeah, so you're coming out here. All right, and then Ryan, yourself, you're going to be running the place from the front of the house side, right?
Yeah, that's the plan.
And have you done it? Do you know what you're doing?
I'd like to think so. You put me on the spot. I liked your question more, but...
What is it that you do? No, but where have you been before so that we can help paint the picture?
Yeah,
the mystery of Ryan.
In the food and bev space... A lot of my experience comes from bottle shops. Raleigh specifically, I've worked at State of Beer and Tasty Beverage.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
I spent some time in Charlotte for a couple years so my wife could get her master's degree. And during that time, when we moved, I wanted to learn the backside of it. So I worked for Noda, I worked for Ass Clown, those, and tried to learn both and every side of kind of that space of, you know, that interaction, right?
Yeah.
And then moved back here, worked at State of Beer, and then was at Tasty during the pandemic. That was very interesting. You know, Johnny is he's taken safety first, so the line he likes to use is you know, when I can safely pour a beer without using a mask, that's when they'll open. So I bring that up just because, you know, working in retail during a normal cycle without a pandemic and those types of things, and then seeing how, you know, restaurants and people are trying to cope in this time is very interesting. So
You'll do well with the fact that you have a large outside dining space. Yeah. That's what we're over at Y Hill always happy with, because we've got more than enough space to keep it going. There's still – the thing that I just feel most unfortunate about the pandemic is just the amount of fear that people have sure. right now. And that's and it's not going to go away until, you know, I guess a vaccine or just the statistics start going down. But I think it's the thing that makes me most sad is that I'll see a regular guest of ours yeah. that always orders beers to go. That person will not touch a menu, won't step foot inside, which is fine because we have like all
QR code menu.
QR code mm-hmm. stuff. Right. Yeah, they can order it all online. But, you know, but because we're a brewery that changes all the time, the beer that they like, it doesn't exist any longer. So then they're like, oh, what else do you have? And then they don't want to be engaged with us. So then we're trying to, like,
yeah.
from afar go, the new Pilsner is now called this. Like, that's the one you want. And it just sucks that, like, fear yeah. is really taking over so much, and I don't know. I mean, it's not going to go away until there are solutions. And I do think that a lot of that is predicated on or will be subdued after today. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll got a minute. Yeah.
Now, of course, you're probably going to be listening to this in like 10 days from when we actually recorded this. So the listener knows who the president is.
Hopefully.
Maybe.
I don't know. Ooh. This could take a very long time.
That is a very good point.
Yeah. They did say it's going to take time. I'm pretty certain that we're all not going to know tonight.
Nope.
And we probably won't know for a few days. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it taking a really long time until it is actually correct. Like, let's take our time. Let's count all those votes.
I'm not looking forward to the shit show between now and when it's called. Mm-hmm. But if we had to wait and it was just a, like, you know, responsible process and we're waiting for the votes to be counted.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
We know that it won't be that way. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I guess we'll see how this goes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the breweries you mentioned you work for in Charlotte kind of has a good title for that.
No,
no duh.
Duh,
for sure.
Yeah. No,
duh. Duh. No, duh. Yeah.
And it wasn't no duh. Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's talk about a little bit about you building up a business in Durham. Durham is a different town than
sure.
most towns in North Carolina. And I would say, you know, we've analyzed on the show a little bit about the Durham's response to COVID, which I think, you know, it's foolish to say that Durham has a voice, like one voice, because it's definitely blended yeah. with many different cultures and societies inside. But for the most part, Durham kind of shut down during COVID, whereas, say, like Raleigh yeah. was kind of open, right?
I feel like they did a better job. Mm-hmm. And I say this, you know, watching from the outside, and obviously I was intimately involved, and I know that I was on some meetings with city council and city officials, with a lot of other restaurant owners, trying to understand what's being done, what can be done, what should we do, you know, make mm-hmm. decisions and make adjustments. And as much as people could try, they seem to be trying. There's always that little bit of, like, politicians want that pat on the back just for doing stuff, even if it's not effective. So yeah. there was a little bit of that. I think it kind of got shot in the face. I appreciated some of the other restaurant owners being like, all right, just because you did something doesn't mean it's good. You mm-hmm. know, like, we got to
right. –
what are we doing that's good, that's effective, that's helping people get back to work? And then even now, I would say, you know, I haven't spent as much time in the Raleigh downtown as I used to. But the Durham downtown is pretty, there's less inside dining, right, than what you see here. I mean, some patios and stuff like that, but for the most part, they're still kind of keeping most of that stuff down. And I appreciate it. It's the business owners that I've known over there, they're trying to take care of their staff. They're trying to not lose their businesses. I mean, they're doing what they can, I say this as somebody getting into that game, like watching from the outside, has been humbling. It's been, I'm glad I'm not in the thick of it yet. You know, I know that I will be, but trying to see how these guys are pivoting and the moves that they're making, and I mean, trying to take care of the staff and figure out how to do that. So I'll say that it feels like Durham on a whole did a little bit better. I say this as a Raleigh resident, and, you know, my wife's a teacher here. I was a little bit upset with how they handled stuff. You know, I wish they would have been a little bit more proactive and a little less reactive on some of the calls.
With how Raleigh handled it,
yes.
You refresh it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, I've a chef that I work with and has restaurants in Raleigh and in restaurants in Durham. And he was saying how frustrated he was with what's going on in Durham, and that, you know, he's saying that his business in Raleigh is actually up year right. over year, mm-hmm. but that his Durham business is just stagnant and down because, you know, yeah. that people are just not going out.
And I say this to somebody who's not in it, right? Yeah, like any opinion that I have, you know, like I'm not there. But I can say this as a business owner, and, you know, this is statewide and even federally speaking, you know, it is a weird thing to say that your business can't be open, but then there's no real financial remedies for yeah. your problems. And so they're just like, hey, it does feel like the government's saying, like, well, you have to fail. You know,
and, well, I think they're kind of in speaking from their point of view, I think they're like, figure it out. Like you got to figure it out. And it's not like the most helpful, but it's almost like tough love. I mean, hey, getting back to the dad scenario, yeah. yesterday I took a walk in our neighborhood,
yeah.
and I was at the Lynn Elementary right there, and they have a little playground. And my daughter, she wanted to do the little zip line thing that carries sure. her over. And she's 7, and she can do this stuff. But she saw dad there, and she wanted dad to help. And she's like, Dad, yeah. hold me while I go across this. And I said, how about you try first? And she's like, what? I'm like, I think you can do this. And she's like, I'm like, you try and I'll catch yeah. you if you fail. And she's like, or if you fall, whatever. And she's like, okay. And I do kind of appreciate that mentality. I mean, obviously I did that sure. with my own children, but she got on and she zipped right across. And the look of gratification on her face was all I needed and all she needed. And I will say, not to be like, oh, big government and all, but
right.
government's like, hey, look, there's a pandemic. We're not telling you, you can't be open. If you want to be open, though, you got to yeah. at least do these things. You got to be socially distant. Right. You got to wear a mask. You got to have sanitizer. You got to take temperatures of your employees. You got to do the responsible things and get it done. We're not saying that you can't be open. Now, other yeah. states are choosing different approaches as well. And there, I would say that that point of view is you're taking the responsibility out of the hands of entrepreneurs and business owners. Like, California is, like, shut down. And, you know, but then also, like, Florida, Kylie's Florida over there is like wide open. Yeah,
as if the pandemic yeah. doesn't exist.
Florida. Yeah.
I would say that North Carolina, as it is a swing state, is a purple state, is pretty much purple when it comes to the political views of what we're doing in the stance. And I would say that I at least appreciate the fact that we as business owners and such are being able to make that decision now. I know that other people listening to this show might roll their eyes when I'm saying that, so I apologize, and I'm not trying to oversimplify. But at least you're allowed to make these decisions. You can be closed and be safe, or you can be open and try to be as safe as possible during this time.
And there's been a lot of amazing pivots. And I mean, I think on that front, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think the bars right now where they still can't be open, and how there's still some people in that window space where they can't legally be open, but they still have, you know, financial requirements. I do think that the rules are in such a place now where if you can pivot, you should have, or hopefully you will. But,
I mean, I know that, like, look, like, the weather is starting to get colder, so mm-hmm. patios are going to become less viable.
Yeah.
We were just having this conversation before the show started. It's like, what are you going to do with these big patios? The aforementioned Y Hello is kind of making their nut on this huge patio that we have. And so, but we're taking the idea. We have these plastic sheets that are going to fold down all around the whole place. We reinvested the money that we're making right now into heaters and into, like, infrastructural yeah. heaters, like not just buying propane tanks all the time, but putting in, like, actual piping into the yeah, system, so that it's yeah. always hardlined, it's always available and ready, because this isn't going to go away ever. I mean, like, you should create an outdoor environment that's comfortable forever for your business, because I think that's always going to be the case, that people will prefer to be outside rather than inside because of the initial fear that started here. And even as things get better, and let's just say that COVID doesn't exist in our lives to a certain extent in a few years, there'll always be something else. There's always going to be another thing. So
yeah.
we need to be able to kind of just be set up for what you can do to make your business work.
You know, Max, that reminds me, Y Hill didn't ask, what can my state do for me? They said, what can we do for our state? And they put in the heaters and the gas. And
sure.
That's going to be a comfortable patio pretty much throughout the winter in North Carolina because the people that don't know.
I thought this was a commercial you were getting into or something.
No, but obviously, President John Kennedy, who you informed me the other day, was the biggest voter turnout in history. So it's going to be too late, but hopefully you all voted.
Yeah, I always have fear of getting my sources and my facts from anybody. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, like I had a question. I was like, gosh, I just saw the poll that came out that 92 million early votes have been tallied.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's cool. What does that mean for our population? And then I didn't even think about it because I know that our population is like 330 million or so. Right. But then if you look, dive deeper into it. You have to look at just who are eligible voters, right? So like that everybody under 18 can't vote.
Sure.
And anybody with a felony can't vote. And so you take those people out and it leaves us with a VEP, voter eligible population. And so that's only like 234 million or so. Mm-hmm. And so the 92 million that came in early represents 38% of all people that can vote right now. And what that means in general is that over the last 100 years, the national average of total votes for our general elections has been about 55% of the population, which is really shitty, Americans, that only a little bit more than half of us are voting. So
I've never not voted.
By the way, a wrench in that, is that for all elections or just presidential
elections? Okay. So for presidential elections, the average for the last 100 years has been averaged about 55%. Right. Now, historically, if you go back to like George Washington till now, the average is 62%. It was far higher in the first 100 and some odd years that we were a country. And so more people were voting. It was a smaller populace at the time too. So who knows what all that means. But then the biggest spikes in voter turnout that we've ever seen were the original African-American male suffrage movement in 1870, and then the female suffrage movement in the 1920s, and then, of course, the civil rights time of the 60s, which was tumultuous to say the least. But I'd say that we feel very close to that time right now. And so the highest voter turnout in the last 100 years was, when JFK defeated Nixon, and that was 62.8%. This is just all off the memory that I had, but I just did these numbers on my own. I took like actual facts that of actual voter turnout versus actual population, and then just did my own. I put it in an Excel spreadsheet and did it myself. I'm like, I want to know this for me. And then after I got this information, I thought, oh, this is interesting. I'll share this on Facebook or whatever. But
it will be fascinating to see what the actual voter turnout percentage is.
Yeah. So we're only 17% away from hitting the average, like without Super Tuesday, without that, we're only 17% away. I would like to think that we have at least 17 more percent that are going to vote. The problem that I foresee with this whole thing is that all the people that were going to vote voted. Because we got the word out. So are those 92 million going to be like the lion's share of all the votes that we're going to get? And are we just going to get up to about 55%?
And plus with lines today, as they typically are on election day, is that going to be fearful for people because we are still in the middle of a pandemic that's re-rising? So.
Right. So I would think that most of the people that are living in fear pre-voted if they were going to vote at all.
Yeah.
But I also do have
faith. Or voted early.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Did early voters turn out or mailed it in or so. And I will say that I feel confident and positive for the American public. I don't care who you're voting for. I care that you vote. Care that your voice is being heard now that we can get into the Electoral College that we're not going to get into.
Sure.
That also does eliminate people's votes in states that are dominated. But in a state like North Carolina, and since this is a North Carolina podcast, your vote really fucking matters.
Yeah.
So,
They said that Wake County specifically was one of the most contentious counties.
Yeah.
Really?
And then North Carolina. I mean, it's been broken down, but this was one of the most contentious counties.
I believe it, man. When I was working at Midtown Grill, that was like your traditional, like, I'm just be straightforward. It was pretty like white, you know, upper middle class Republican kind of point of view in North Hills, Raleigh. Then I left and went to Standard Foods with the aforementioned Scott Crawford. He had just left, but I was there and I realized, Raleigh is not just a bunch of middle class Republicans.
Yeah.
There are gay people and black people and Asians and like everybody kind of also lives here in Raleigh. And it's amazing that you just went from the outside of the Beltline to the inside of the Beltline and it changed
cities.
It's like a microcosm of the country, right? Like you get into Raleigh and you see all blue everywhere, Biden Harris signs, and then you get out into like the suburban neighborhoods and it's big time Trump country.
I will say this, when I just went to Wintergreen, Virginia for a vacation with the kids. It's, you know, kind of in the center of Virginia. And as we were driving north, going through kind of like the Creedmoor area and then just going headed out through like Bahama and all that, on all the rural streets, you would probably think that on all the rural streets you'd see a lot of pro-Trump. It was interesting for me to note that in North Carolina, driving north through these rural towns, the lion's share of the signs I saw were pro-Biden-Harris, which was weird. And then as soon as we crossed state lines into Virginia, it was Trump fever.
All over,
which was interesting because I also thought that Virginia was pretty blue or purple-ish in some ways. But we only traveled through the rural parts of the state because we were just going through the mountains and all the, you know, the Blue Ridge Mountains. But it was very Trump heavy, and I noticed it to be a real discerning line when we went from one state to the next.
Interesting.
I mean, I would love to see the cities and the rural areas get to a place where we realize it is the same team. Like it's I don't know, you get into the pandemic now, and I know we're kind of having more political talk than I mean, it's election day, but it's with the pandemic has driven more people into the internet, and then you get less, like one of the things that you were talking about being sad and the fear, one of the things that I miss right now is being out in bars and restaurants and out in the world is you had to encounter people that weren't just like you or weren't in your immediate social circle. And on some level,
you don't get that on your Facebook and Instagram posts.
Well, and on some level, you're deciding to engage with these people, and you're being in these places, and those rules of common courtesy and things like that, and people say things that are challenging and make you think, or you may have a new experience that you hadn't planned on. You have that, and that's the other piece, to just see that kind of evaporate. And then obviously it's a contentious election. It's been more divisive. You know, it feels like people are getting more and more into their camps and less willing to listen, less willing to have conversations. And, you know, the thing about the rural areas is like the tax dollars from the cities pay for all of your programs, right? Like, I mean, that's just how it works.
But also a lot of government subsidies help pay for a lot of farming, too. So
correct. But a lot of those areas, like, feed cities. Like, and so it's one of those things where, I don't know, it doesn't have to be so contentious, right?
Yeah. But well, and I think just bringing it back to the restaurant world, restaurants are, especially from a staffing point of view, the ultimate come together thing, right?
It is.
I mean, just like a team or a sports team, you know, you're all there to essentially move and drive the business forward to make money, to make people happy, if that also, you know, feeds your soul, so to speak. But and no matter what walk of life or what creed or what beliefs you have, you work together to accomplish that. And that's the simplicity of the thing. And we have lost that as Americans of like, well, let's drive together to make America a better place.
I mean, it still exists. It's definitely not what's in the media. I mean, one of the things I'm so
excited... Well, it still exists, but let me just interrupt. Yeah. Like, the fact that we haven't had restaurants open and it's been such a tenuous moment has really taken away from that, to add what you were saying earlier about how divided we are.
Yeah. And well, you have to... And sorry to cut... You have to put in the pandemic as well, right? So, to your point towards the end, since there's not a lot of opportunity outside for people to convene, you only have the people in your household in your you know, quarantine bubble, and that just can quickly become an echo chamber of what you want to hear and what values you kind of you share.
Absolutely.
And it just pushes, and there's no, aside from social media, which is the last place to do it, there's nowhere to share.
It's crazy.
Just a conversation.
I will say, I think actually social media has been one of the more positive things for a lot of ways. It has forced us to connect because we had no other way to connect, and we've been able to become more present. People are choosing to maybe actually make more public statements and decisions because it's the only way they can be heard. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're actually getting people to kind of think more and process their point of view. There are a lot of people that will just listen to a lot of other people that they'll deem as, you know, smart, intelligent, good point of view. But now individuals are being tasked with the thing. Like, hey, I know what I can say, but what do you think? Yeah. And I actually think social media has helped give voice to many people. And so it's as divisive and shitty as it is positive, but I do think it's forcing people to make a decision. That in my long rant I put on with all these stats, the last thing I said is have a voice in this life. Yeah. Vote. It's forcing you to think. And I think being a critical thinker in this world is kind of rare, but it is now becoming much more
necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I have to say I disagree with the social media thing because I think it creates more divisive because you can just sit at home and be like, no, I don't agree with that. Versus if you were out having a conversation with someone, you would be more inclined to have civil discourse and actually listen to what they have to say versus, okay, you read it, you get more mad, and then you no, my point is right, you know, and you don't necessarily listen.
And a lot of that happen, and a lot of that does happen with public figures, because, I mean, think of, if you put it through what we're doing now, a podcast space, what's going to get you more clicks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the edge opinions. It's right. The 5% on either side. If you're right down the middle every time, you might be right, and you're kind of giving both sides
Matt's
a voice.
Matt's going to title this episode "Live Nudes Trump Wins."
Nice.
It'll get you clicks, though.
Thank you for doing that work for me. Now I don't even have to think about what title is.
I'd click on that for sure.
Yeah. Well, hey, guys, before we get out of here, we do have a couple of people that we'd like to give love to. We were talking about building out your wine program, and I know that Jay Lights and the team came over to Wild Hill. You ordered every single cocktail that we made.
Doing research, man.
And big props to Corinna in the kitchen, behind the bar. She made 13 cocktails in 12 minutes or vice versa, either way. But it was great. Knocked them all out. And I said, if I see any of these cocktails on your menu, I'm going to come hunt you down. But it was great because you were like doing research and you went to Taza, you went to Plates, you went to a bunch of places that are open right now and have pretty good beverage programs, and doing the proper research. Well, I would say continue that research and go. If you are into wine, into beer, into crafting things at home, you can go to Triangle Wine Company. They have 4 locations. If you're listening to the show, you're probably close to it, as we tend to favor the Triangle area. But you can go to Holly Springs, you can go to Cary, you can go to Morrisville, and way down there in Southern Pines. Maybe golf a little bit while you're out there.
Right.
But go to TriangleWineCo.com. And when you're online, you can use the NCFB promo code for a discount. You can also use it in person. If you happen to walk in, you can still get curbside. You can get delivery. So help them out. Help yourself. Get fantastic wine and beer at the Triangle Wine Company.
And while you're there, also, something that you're going to taste today, but you might want to get more of, you're actually going to get 2 gifts today, because that's how cool the NCFB podcast guests
are. You guys are super cool.
So the first one you're going to be getting is our famous, not our famous, but the famous proof alcohol ice cream.
We made them famous.
Yeah. And so you might want to think about offering that at Jay Lights, because it's alcohol and ice cream together in this creamy, delicious mixture of, say, bourbon caramel or moonshine cheesecake or all the
strawberry
delicious
moonshine. Yeah,
strawberry moonshine. And now the new pumpkin spice is have you had it yet?
I have yet to have it. I believe the delivery is coming this week.
Oh, we need to get our delivery. Yeah. But check that out. It's a way to think differently about dessert. And you can also get it at the Triangle Wine Company. If you don't happen to live near one of those, you can get it at Harris Teeter or Lowe's. Check out the red named proof alcohol ice cream refrigerator. You can find it in the beer and wine section.
And one of the other gifts you're going to receive today is a little pick-me-up. Maybe after you're sitting there bumming with all that alcohol and cream in your belly, you're like, I'm about to take an afternoon nap. Well, no, fear not. You can perk yourself up with a little Boss Coffee, which is Japanese, which is Japan is just a small little city inside of North Carolina. but Boss Coffee, it's flash brewed, which means that it gets extremely hot when brewed and then instantly chilled fast. It's a kind of a unique Japanese style to make cold brew style coffee. It's only available on Amazon, but if you do buy either their black, their vanilla, or their cafe au lait flavors, you can put in the NCFB podcast promo code and receive 10% off. That's on Amazon.com. Just type in Boss Coffee. When you're buying it, click in the NCFB podcast promo code and enjoy it. It is the most popular canned coffee drink across Asia, Australia, and New Zealand, which are also small little islands just off the Outer Banks of North Carolina. But go there, everybody, I really appreciate you all coming in here. Thank you. This
Thanks
has been really
us.
Fun. Matt, what else you got?
Thank you for coming in. Thank you for sharing all your stories and people out there. Next month, next month is
the grand will be the 30th, but we're hoping to do some soft stuff before then.
The 30th of November.
Yes. So, 30th this month.
We'll go check out Jay Light. You will eat and drink very merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.